Perhaps the most important relationship in many churches is the one that exists between the worship leader and the senior pastor. And yet, oftentimes, it's one of the most difficult. Today, myself and Joe are joined by Dan Thompson as we talk about some of the ways worship team members do their pastor and worship leaders a disservice. We also talk directly to senior pastors and some of the responsibilities they have in protecting and supporting their worship teams. And of course, as usual, other things come up along the way too.
It's time once again for the Worship Ministry Catalyst Podcast.
Worship Ministry Catalyst is a resource for all worship leaders and team members serving in the local church.
So take a seat at the table and join the conversation as we discuss all things worship, from team dynamics to technology and song selection.
And now it's time for the show.
It's episode 230, which I mistakenly thought was 223 about 30 seconds ago. So clearly engaged. Hey, everybody. It's time once again for the Worship Ministry Catalyst Podcast. I hope you have just experienced a wonderful summer long holiday and thrilled to be joined by our friend from Canada, recently celebrating Canada Day on July 1st, Mr. Dan Thompson. Hello, sir.
Hey, everybody. Good to be here. I know you guys well, so I'm comfortable talking to you. Just don't throw any crazy questions at me.
Why not? Oh, sure. Why did you leave your position, Dan?
Nicely played, Joe. Nicely played.
I'm here for you, buddy. Well, tell me real quick, just Canada Day. I know how you spend it, but how did you spend Canada Day? And what is Canada Day?
Yeah, Canada Day is really just a celebration of the fact that we are a free nation, which was obviously, we're all British settlers, English, British, Scottish settlers to Canada.
Irish.
And Irish, yeah, thank you. And it became the Dominion of Canada. And it wasn't right away that all the provinces were on board. I think the last one was Newfoundland. But it's just Newfies. The fact that Newfies, yes. A united free nation. Now, if you look on the news in the last week, we're not acting that way.
I've been noticed. I just kind of caught wind of that story of the people burning down churches. Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah. You know, and people get a little bit of information and then they think the worst and they act the worst and they copy other things. And overall, there has been bad behavior in Canada, just like United States and other countries. And we're just usually nicer about it and a little bit more forgiving. And we say sorry a lot, but that hasn't been the case as of late. I feel like every issue becomes a big issue right now, just because of the way the media portrays things and culture itself. People are tired and worn out. So, I mean, we are still a free nation. You know, we complain about our own leaders just like everybody else. But we are still a free nation. We live in a beautiful place. And I live in, I would say, one of the most beautiful places in all of Canada, Prince Edward Island. I live on an island. A close second would be Vancouver and BC and sort of the West Coast where you guys are in the Canadian part. But yeah, Canada Day for me was actually working with Joe. because Canada Day is, you know, we were working with US companies and it's not Canada Day there, but that's okay. When you're an independent, freelance, you know, consultant, you don't have these statutory holidays the way you would working for a corporation, but that's okay.
I'm a terrible employer.
Yeah. Well, today, I mean, today's technically a holiday for us. And
that's right. Yeah.
And here you are.
Yeah.
Talking to a Canadian.
Yeah.
So I'm just reversing things on Joe and he has to work on his day off.
This isn't work. This is hanging out with friends.
Yeah. Well, I have a theory. I think the whole world has PTSD at the moment. And I think we're just anytime now. I mean, now anytime anything happens, no matter how big of a deal it is, it's just we default back to our worst coping mechanisms, and whatever that was when in our most unhealthy, you know, state of mind or state of emotions. That's what I think is coming out at the moment. Even though supposedly we're starting to move on from this, I think there's a lot of, I think there's going to be a lot of emotional and mental baggage that comes with us for a while, and I think we're going to just keep seeing that until we just somehow find a way. Like the whole world needs a month off or something. You know, just like need to shut everything down for a month, shut off all the TV, shut off all social media, just hit the power switch for about a month and give people a chance to recover, and then see if we can go back to some kind of healthy life.
Well, a Canadian guy, Kerry Newhoff, you guys might have heard of him.
Oh, yeah.
He's a leadership guy now. He actually was a pastor of a church not far from where I used to live. And he's talking about the Great Resignation, how up to 40% of people in current employed jobs are actually considering resigning and starting something else. So it's an interesting time.
Yeah, and I was listening. I'm not completely caught up on his podcast, but he mentioned, or I think maybe it wasn't him. It was Jeff Henderson, who mentioned that they're starting to see pastors kind of like after building projects. A lot of senior pastors resign after building projects because they get burnt out and they kind of get their church through the process of getting the new church finished, and then as soon as they're done, they resign. And that he said they're starting to see some of that, or they're anticipating seeing a lot of that after the pandemic. Like pastors got their church through the pandemic, and now they're done.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. You're right. I came through a building project, you know, about a $2.5 million building project, but there was a time lag before I ended up departing from my role, and it wasn't for that reason. But I can see how they do say that building projects split churches. So it's
a good thing my church has no money, so we have had no building projects or project. I'll say project for your sake. I'll say project.
Project, yeah. But it's funny when you reflect on building projects. As a church, I've had to go through sort of a self-discovery of what my perspective is on church buildings in general, and I'm in a church now where we're on the move fairly often. And we're at, you know, the movie theater for the most part, but because of the pandemic, we've had to shift around. And it's been a lot more like Jesus and the disciples wandering in the wilderness, and we go from place to place, town to town, city to city, and it's been actually rejuvenating. And I dare say, I don't know if I would enjoy just being sitting in one building that you own that you expect everyone to come to. Because we've been going to them, and it's been refreshing. Not that that's the only model, but I think it's been good for it to be so different that everywhere you go, there's new people kicking the tires of church because it's not typical.
I was actually thinking about that exact thing. My car's at the mechanic, and it's about an hour away from our house, and so I was waiting for my wife to pick me up, and so I walked from the mechanic to a coffee shop, and I walked by this old church. That I'd known for a long time has kind of changed hands now a couple of times, and it was a Thursday morning, and they had their sign, their little sandwich board sitting out on the sidewalk, you know, advertising their service, you know, come in for our service, you know, Sundays at 10:30 a.m. or something like that was all it said, and. You know, you've kind of been talking the same thing similarly. Of course, we have a building, so it's not like you where we're going around to different places. But the contrast struck me at that moment of the Great Commission, and you know, the Great Commission is therefore go and make disciples. it's like we've translated that somehow to be therefore come.
Yeah, and actually, that, not to be sound all preachy and judgmental, but it really did make me have to reevaluate how I did church for the last 10 years as a leader, to think like, so we sit in our offices and we expect people to come for help. Mm-hmm. We ask people to make appointments to see us, or, you know, going to the coffee shop is like, you're a church pastor, where's your building? You know, right. These are the questions that people ask. And I've really enjoyed the fact that even at the Cineplex, you know, people are coming in to watch The Fast and the Furious while we're tearing down. And it's actually fun because you're in a public space, multimedia, in a public space, and people are coming and going constantly, and they ask questions. Why are you doing this? Why is there a sound system in here? You know, why are people hugging each other, like sort of, well, they're kind of fist pumping right now. But yeah, it's just so different. Even the community halls, we've just been picking community halls throughout the island here. And the buzz around the community halls, and if you understand PEI culture, everyone talks about everybody, not to everybody. The buzz is, where's the church this week? And they're all curious to know where we are. So it's been interesting.
Cool.
Here's the awkward pause. Yeah. Just want to throw that out there.
Well, I think we were talking offline about worship in general, because this is a worship ministry podcast, the relationship with the sort of worship pastor, leader, and pastor. Did we want to dive into that?
Yeah, I think so.
I just really want to, as I did before, challenge the validity of this conversation, considering we have a pastor who is also the worship leader. We have a guy who's doing nothing. And then you have me, who's the only one that this applies to. But that's an interesting dynamic, because Dan is serving in a volunteer sense right now. This is a kind of has switched positions very recently. I've been in the same position now for, 17 years, something like that, which... there you go. And David, was it January, February of last year, 2020, that you ended up putting that worship leader helm back on, wearing it at the same time as the as teaching pastor.
Right.
Did I get that right?
Yep. Yeah. Yeah. So up until that time, you know, we had worship leaders volunteer, and then before that paid. That kind of worked with me, but then prior to that, I was the worship leader working with the senior pastor, in a paid role. So, kind of been on just about every side of this idea that you can be on. So, but yeah, Joe, you're the only one that really has any actual wisdom on this one. So we're just going to you talk for the next 20 minutes, I think, and we'll sit and listen and take in what, but you can solve all of our problems.
I'm not really talking about that I have any wisdom whatsoever.
Oh, but you do. Know, there's only a little bit of sarcasm in that.
I know, right. Yeah, it's a love language, right? It's the lost sixth love language, yeah. Sarcasm. Yeah. I will cut you down while I tell you I love you at the same time. Oh, I love you. I'm a volunteer, and I've always been a volunteer. And I think, you know, I have to acknowledge that there has got to be a shift or a dynamic there's a difference there between a paid worship leader engaging with a pastor and a volunteer worship leader engaging with a pastor. And I think there's not to rabbit trail us a bit, but you know, I don't get together with Brian, pastor at our church, leading up to the service to talk about what's the song selection, what's that. You know, we have, you know, we text, we, you know, occasionally we'll have a phone call or something like that. But I think we've developed a trust that what is selected is going to serve, and also that either one of us can say, hey, I think this would be better than this. Or I don't play that very well. It has a, you know, I don't want to do the key change today because I don't have the high notes or whatever. But there's a degree of trust that we've developed. Dan, you may be able to speak to this as well as anybody. If you are a paid worship leader, is there an expectation or a change in dynamic with the pastor in terms of, you know, music selection, the feedback loop, that kind of stuff?
Yeah, I think if there's criticism or confusion or complaints, problems, lack of understanding in a if it's a paid role where somebody's sort of working in the same office as the other leaders, it tends to be you're just the automatic funnel, so it's sort of your problem. Whereas when you're a volunteer, the onus really is on the leader of the church to say, you know, I'm ultimately accountable for everything that happens on the platform. So if that's the case, I better take a vested interest in making sure that everyone understands. I've clearly communicated, this is how the flow is going to be. This is sort of where I'm landing in my message. In a paid position, you can make a lot of assumptions. You can communicate more often. In a volunteer position, you might be working construction and you don't have the luxury of that type of communication. And you have to be extra thankful that they're willing to donate their time. So there isn't a job description where you have to do this. Somebody right. in a volunteer role could say, you know what, it's been a rough week. You guys are kind of on your own. And, you know, if there's pushback, you can say, well, it's not like I'm getting paid for this. So there, I still think there needs to be understanding and some commitment as a volunteer that are you called to this or is it just you're filling a role because you can sing well or you can play well? There's got to be a lot more at stake than just the, you know, you're a professional musician who might tithe their time. I, you know, use that term specifically because I have had people say, well, you know, I don't give to the church, but I serve every week. You know, that's another topic for another day, but I think there's a huge tension with volunteerism if you're not valued. And if there's expectations, paid or unpaid, and they're not clearly communicated, you will always have strife. And who's the ultimate person in charge? And I don't mean in charge like boss. I mean in charge like the from when people walk in the door to when they leave, are they shepherded, cared for, fed, and in community together? And that's a huge responsibility and requires a lot of humility. Not I'm the boss, but the opposite. You know, and Jesus exampled that in washing people's feet and being in the peripheral for most group activities. He wasn't at the forefront. He was pushed forward. People wanted to hear from him, but he didn't say, I'm the boss of any situation, really. He was exampling having to rise to the occasion. Now, of course, he's Jesus, but even he, being who he was, exampled humility first. And, you know, even things like changes on the fly, there needs to be a level of freedom that you can have with that. But if you're a good leader, you're changing things on the fly because you really sense the Spirit of God moving you in that direction. And you can communicate that, hey, this wasn't something that, you know, Pastor, whoever, and I talked about this morning, but I feel led. So qualifying statements, that's showing respect for leadership. And whether I'm paid or not as a volunteer, I'll always make sure my heart's out and I'm not trying to come across super professional. I feel people have a very low tolerance for being disingenuous. They have a high tolerance for people who may be not as good, but are really genuine. I know you guys want to chime in on that.
I want to chime in on the volunteer thing really quickly from a senior pastor perspective, and that is because we had a volunteer team for a long time, volunteer leaders, several different leaders, and one of the things that I struggled with as their pastor was, you know, I don't want to ask too much of somebody, I don't want to overburden, you know, a volunteer, and so because of that, I think it can be easy to err on that side and not, you know, either address issues or even just make simple requests, you know, sometimes making a request of doing one song or another. If there's much pushback at all on that as a senior pastor, it's like, okay, well, don't worry about it. Even though, you know, maybe the song is going to be a perfect, you know, home run fit for the sermon because I've written the sermon, so I know it's going to be a fit. But if there's a little bit of pushback, well, I just don't think I have the time to work on it this week. Or don't really feel like doing, or we already had the set picked, or, you know, so on and so forth. And, then it becomes hard when you're leading volunteers to push for that. And so I would challenge on this side, and I'll defend, you know, I'll go on the other side, but on this side, I'll just challenge a little bit, you know, if you're a volunteer worship leader, you know, what can you do to help your senior pastor? And even saying that feels selfish as a senior pastor, but like, you know, if are there things you can go, maybe you can just go a little bit above and beyond what you want to do or what you're used to doing, so that you can really serve, you know, serve the senior pastor, in essence serve your congregation, because that's what your senior pastor is probably trying to do. I doubt he's just selfishly asking you to do a song because he really wants to do it, but it's most likely
mine does.
Yeah.
Mine
does. yeah. So good thing he watches this so that he can hear you say that.
Yeah. Yeah.
But you know, there may be an opportunity to humble yourself and serve a little bit, like Dan was saying. Just, you know, I don't want to do the song. I don't want to put in the effort to learn the new song or to change out the set list or whatever it is. But here's an opportunity for me to serve in that respect.
You know, it's interesting because one of the things that, like, you know, I have refused any kind of remuneration. Compensation as the worship leader, other than like expenses. And part of it is kind of feeding off what you just said, David, is to maintain a modicum of control. You know, that having had some unpleasant experiences, I suppose, in the past, wanting to know that I don't have any financial dependence upon my leadership, you know. And it's kind of interesting, you know, to say you can elect to view my refusal of any kind of compensation as generosity or whatever, but it's really selfish, is ultimately what it is. And I'm, you know, not trying to make myself and, you know, a jerk, but that is a certain part of that is, you know, not I'm not trying to manipulate. But, you know, there is, I think you alluded to it, the idea that, hey, you don't want to make me mad because I could walk away at any point, which isn't my intention, but I could see how it would be perceived that way. Like, oh, I don't want to push Joe the wrong direction, or maybe we won't have a worship leader and, you know, where are we going to get somebody that is really, truly as awesome as he is?
I don't know what to say about that, actually. I was
trying to think of an example while you're sharing that of ways that you can show respect as a leader, volunteer or otherwise. I think the biggest thing that always drove me crazy is when you use a tool like, let's say, Planning Center, and nobody logs in.
Oof,
nobody pays attention. Nobody touches it. The worship leader doesn't put the songs in. It's just song 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 in a template. And then they, you know, might text you a short list. If you're an organized leader, which most should be, and you're paying for a tool every month and 5% of your participants are in it, then it doesn't mean the tool's bad. It means that people may not care. And that's a battle that, you know, will be forever. But I think it shows a lot of respect when somebody says, here, please put the songs in, and maybe even the durations. Just guess them. You know, like I put an average of 3 minutes and 30 seconds on every song, regardless of I know it, unless it's a Hillsong or Bethel, and then you just add 3 minutes. But
12.
You know, it's or 12. But you know how long things take on average. So show some respect and maybe give an idea of how long we think the service is going to be. And then the pastor has a good sense of, well, where do I need to, you know, is it a 40-minute sermon or is it a, you know, do I have freedom? Or maybe you want to move songs around, but if they're not in there, you can't do that. So it's just the respect factor of using the tools provided, especially if they're paid for. And that's the one thing that drove me crazy is when I spend time getting it all ready and nobody looks at it. And like, oh, can you print that for me 5 minutes before we go on?
Yeah.
You know, and not listen, you know, you pick the keys, you pick, get all the PDF downloads, MP3 links and all that kind of stuff. And nobody cares.
Yeah. I would say even as a worship leader, that is a bit frustrating with a worship team, you know, where, and right now I'm operating without a worship team, just because we're waiting for things to normalize. But the idea that, hey, here's the songs, here's the keys. And they're like, oh, I don't have that one. Like, okay. I own the fact that I may be not as timely as I should be on some of those things. I also, coming back kind of to the relationship with pastor, is that I really try to respond to the scripture that he's going to teach and the angle at which he is coming to that scripture, so that the song selection is a good reflection or a good companion to that. However, I am convicted of the fact that I sometimes don't deliver things in a timely manner. I don't take as much time as I should to prepare myself, so that when the rest of the team gets their information, that they feel prepared. They do appropriately get annoyed when I'll do something like that. Let's try this in B flat this week instead of C, because I'm not able to sing as high. And they're like, well, we don't have it, you know?
Yeah,
it's,
you know, by the way, we're wearing gray.
Yeah, those things, that changes in the fly are difficult.
Yeah, and I don't know. You know, I think in some respects, you know, for volunteer, you know, worship team members who are listening or watching, you know, it's easy to just kind of to get into that mindset of, you know, like Dan was saying, you know, this is my thing that I do. That's just what I do. You know, it's our service project. But we don't put anything into it outside of the moments of obligation, and that always shows. I mean, it shows in our attitudes, it shows in the quality of whatever it is that we're doing. I think probably one of the most costly ways that it shows is in the relationship. Whether it's you as a lay, you know, player, you know, a team player, to your worship leader, who might also be a volunteer, you know, who's putting in their time and doing the best they can, and then you're just kind of mailing it in, but it shows, you know, it shows to your relationship and you're serving your senior pastor, and you know that affects you know their relationship with you and you know all of these things where. If we just care just a little bit, I think we can make a big difference in a lot of people's lives.
One other thing to add on to that, because all of a sudden I'm getting ideas of things that have driven me crazy over the last little while. Another one, because most of the time I'm the technical director. I'm behind the scenes making sure video and live streaming and all that kind of stuff happens. Volunteer. And I had some help on Sunday, which was great, with a videographer, somebody actually holding a camera and moving it around, which just takes it to another level of production. But I'm freed up then, and I'm watching the team play and listening to the practice and the interactions. And the one thing I've noticed is for an instrumentalist, like say a guitar player or a bass player, if they say, I don't need music, I just follow along. That's great if that's true. But if you go back and I'm going to encourage some of them to listen to the live stream and remind themselves of how gifted they really are, that they can play on the fly when most of the songs, they're riding an entire key to land on the right note because they actually don't know where to go. And I, as a musician, I'm sensing and I'm feeling the uncomfortableness of the guitar player filling where it's not necessary, the bass player, you know, doing doing arpeggiations because they don't know where to land, so they make a fill. And then you're actually distracting people in worship because you have two or three people faking it because you kind of know the song in your head. So that extra effort to go, okay, well, I'm at least going to have the chord sheet so I can glance over and go, okay, we're in B. Okay, so I know my root note and I can play F and A and a few other notes around it.
Why would you ever play in B? Why? Why would you ever do that?
Because he's a guitarist.
Okay. C or G?
Because he's got capo on three. Yeah. That's why.
Yeah, see, I capo everything in G. It doesn't matter what key it's in. Because
right. You know, thanks, Chris Tomlin. Yeah.
Yeah. But you know what I'm saying? Like, you know, if I say, don't bother printing the music, I'm not going to look at it anyways, then I know I'm destined for a 50% success rate. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And it kind of drives me crazy because I would say I'm a competent musician, but if I don't use the chord sheets, I'm only half paying attention to my hands because I'm trying to lead a congregation and sing. So I'm doing three things plus planning ahead. And you guys know if you're leading worship or even if you're preaching, you're thinking and speaking at the same time, thinking and singing at the same time.
Yeah.
So something is going to give. And if you have the distraction of a bunch of improv musicians all at once, I just feel like it every single week. It's like, oh, if you just look down, you know, what I've done as a worship leader, if people don't ask for music, I don't care. You get every single song in the right key for your part. And I hand it to them. Mm-hmm. And I don't care if they ever look at it. I've equipped them.
Right.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
that's sort of the way I've just done it.
Yeah, when I was paid, I would that was part of my just setup for rehearsal. Was I made sure every stand had a copy of music and the set list on it, and it was just all sitting there ready. Like, there's almost no excuse for that. One of the things that and this might just be a pet peeve of mine, but you know, you thinking of what you were just saying about being a worship leader, you're not just thinking about trying to play that, you know, that note and sing that note at the right time, you know, and this is something that you don't understand until you've done it. But, you know, you're leading the you're leading the congregation in worship. So you're paying attention to the congregation. Here's kind of at the moment, our tech guy stepped down a few weeks ago. And so we don't have a sound guy back in the booth. So fortunately, we've got a PreSonus, you know, and I can kind of do things from the laptop sitting up there. But so at the moment, what's happening with me as worship leader is I'm leading the song, I'm leading the band, leading the rehearsal, trying to listen, you know, critically and make sure that we're all at least on the same page. And then I'm also running the sound and doing, you know, playing the piano and trying to sing on key, you know, all that stuff myself. And then so if you have a worship team member, you know, it's inevitable that I'm going to mess something up. I'm going to say the wrong word at some point in time, and then have, you know, one of my team members will kind of correct me right in the middle of the song. I'm like, I appreciate that because I want to get it right, but at the same time, there's a lot going on here right behind this, you know, behind the keyboard. So if you could just give me just a little bit more grace and trust that I'll get it right during the service. But right now at the moment, I've got about 12 plates up in the air, and I'm just going to have a hard time keeping them all spinning for a second.
Yeah, and you didn't even mention you're probably fixing monitor feeds too.
Right.
our monitor feeds are gone. They don't work anymore. That's my fault. But going into what David's talking about is that you get enough on your plate that at some point you go, well, something's going to fall off the list because there's nobody to steward it.
Yes.
There's nobody who's going to pick that up. Right now, because I'm the only person up on the platform during worship, it's like, okay, no monitor. And I miss it. You know, it took me a long time to get there, but when I got there, you know, I could tell, like, early in the pandemic when I didn't have that, I'm like, I'm flat or sharp or whatever a lot more than I ever thought I was. But I also think that's because I'm not hearing myself. I'm not getting that correction. Kind of coming back to, you know, what are the other balls that you're juggling when you're trying to do that? First of all, we don't want to introduce new complications. I think David, you and I were talking before we started recording that it'd be nice if the dust would settle on some things. Mm-hmm. You know, let's, you know, working towards stability, you know, not adding complications. But one of the things that I think about is, you know, do I feel called to speak to somebody based on how they're responding to worship? Not speak directly to them, but to speak to them, you know, in some way, like, it looks like Deb is having a tough time, or she's really responding to this. Lord, what's going on in her life? Can you give me some insight? I mean, those are things that I'm considering while the song is playing, you know, what's the next chord? What's the next lyric? Am I going too fast? Am I slowing down? Yes to all of those things. and then also, being called to pray in a specific way. Like, you know, something just occurred to me this past week that I'd like to share somehow, but I don't know how it fits with this. And all of a sudden, two thirds of the way through the song, I read a lyric in the song. I sing a lyric in the song and I go, there's the connection. Thank you, Lord. You know, being open to that spirit leadership by the Spirit, doesn't happen when you are distracted by 15 other things, including the person that neglects their music, that is creating a distraction through neglect, let's say. I know that's a really strong thing to say, but there are distractions that are created by neglect where through preparation or just refusal to take the notes, literally notes on a piece of paper. So.
Yeah, maybe we can turn the conversation a little bit. I want to address senior pastors who might be listening, or you know, maybe worship leaders that have a senior pastor that they wish would hear some things. First of all, what would be some things you would say, not to your specific senior pastor, but just in general, some things that if he or she knew this, it would have helped in the past and probably would help in the future.
That's a good question. But, you know, and I have to draw from my own experience a little bit. I appreciate that my pastor is a filter for congregational criticism related to worship. We have a strong enough relationship that I can trust when he comes to me and says, which he did recently, it seems, I've gotten some feedback from folks that it sounds like the songs are slowing down. Not that I'm doing more slow songs, but that a song like, you know, Build Your Kingdom Here, I'm playing it slower. Not that the song is slowing down throughout it, but for some reason, the BPM, I'm not hitting 120, I'm playing it at 100 or something, but enough that a few people are noticing. But he is providing that filter where, frankly, I can be a very defensive and dismissive person for that reason. So to have Brian there is a filter. I really appreciate that. And so, you know, speaking to other senior pastors out there is you can be an objective filter to provide feedback to your worship team and step into that a little bit in the same way that you as the worship leader can do the same. I think that's one of the best parts of my relationship with Brian at our church is that we do, an amazing job of bouncing off of each other. Hey, Brian, here's something that worked, here's something that didn't work. And he can do the same thing for me, and that we trust each other enough that it's not a personal thing.
Yeah, and I would agree with you. And I think they're also the champion for taking on the fact that if something happens on the platform, they're part of it. It's not like if there's a problem, like, oh, I'll go have to talk to the music people because that's not really my thing.
Right.
You need to own everything that's happening. So, you know, if I'm the preacher at the door, which I have been many times, and I'm not leading that week, and there's criticism or questions or comments or even good things, I own all of it. It's not like, oh, it's those guys if it's a problem, and it's me. Mm-hmm. If it's good, it's owning the successes and failures and championing those that are involved in it. And, you know, if somebody says, man, you know, I'm not a big drum person, but that drummer did a really good job today. Usually I'll say, you know what, can you take the extra step and just go and tell them that? Because I think that'd be really good for them to hear, because drummers get a bad rap. Mm-hmm. Just as an example.
Yeah.
Or young people that are getting involved in worship, and people like, man, it's so good to see young people up there. Well, don't tell me that. Tell them. I find people are even afraid to interact. The other thing I was going to mention before I forget is in Joe and Brian's particular example, your interactions live are actually more podcast-like. It's like a banter, which I don't see often in church culture where it's like this thing happens, then that thing happens, and that thing happens. And you guys have a rapport and a back and forth. And I love it when you see, even if it's just a little quip or I'm not sure about that, you know, like when I'm sharing the platform with, you know, the pastor comes up to pray or there's an announcement, I'm not afraid to walk up to my mic and interject, even if it's just something funny, because I find that it brings the room tone up. It gets people going, okay, well, this is going to be fun, because these guys aren't afraid to sort of laugh at themselves. And I don't mean rude. I don't mean mocking. Mm-hmm. I mean encouraging, funny, oh, don't forget about what happened this week. Oh, yeah, I should probably mention that, because it shows that you have a relationship. And people love, going back to that whole disingenuine or genuine connection, if people know you guys all get along, people will get the sense that people get along here.
Yeah.
It's a little harder to do when it's all yourself, though.
Talking to yourself is not an issue, David. It's fine.
I could like just give myself some witty snapbacks and comebacks, and
that's where storytelling comes in. As long as you use discernment,
talk, you know, sarcastically like to myself.
Nice job, David. My wife
told me this about me.
No, I think what you guys are saying is really good. I think that just kind of the world is used to that, maybe even expects that. You know, I was watching just a little bit of the Macy's 4th of July thing that was on TV last night, and they were kind of bouncing around the country to all these different performances. And, there was, even with, even though it was just kind of a performance, there was still a little bit of back and forth, and you could see even the way they performed the songs, there was back and forth amongst the musicians. You know, even though they weren't talking, there was some kind of reciprocal relationship between, you know, the singers and the guitarist and the rest of the musicians on stage. It wasn't just standing there and performing. And I think that's probably just some holdovers from the really, really old model of church, where you had the pulpit and you had the microphone, so there wasn't an opportunity to have any kind of discussion. You know, it's just whoever was behind the pulpit was the one who was heard, and every once in a while there might be some back and forth between the people on stage, but the congregation could never hear what the people on stage were saying.
Right.
But now we're pretty well past that, and so it's something we should probably be more intentional about and take advantage of. And
yeah,
go ahead.
Yeah, no, I was just going to say, I mean, the banter goes back to late night television, you know, Ed McMahon and Johnny Carson. Joe and I have said many times on the Frequency podcast that a podcast without banter is not fun.
Right.
And and even going back to, you know, 80s, you know, metal bands, the singer would come up to the drummer and stand on the drum and interact with them. Like, doesn't matter what genre or what situation, it's always more interesting when there's an engagement with others. Yeah.
Which is a lot easier to do if you're prepared.
Yes.
Full circle. Yeah. Look at you. Go, David.
But yeah, I will say to some of our senior pastors listening that, you know, have the backs of your worship leaders and your worship team members. You know, it's real easy if you're a people pleaser, people person, you don't want to get thrown under the bus with something that you didn't do, you know, because you weren't the one singing or leading the song. And yet you're steering the ship. You're the captain of the ship, right? So I know that that's one thing John Maxwell talks about, is that, you know, leaders give the credit and take the blame. And, you know, it's, even though maybe your pastor, you know, planned the whole service, planned every song, and, you know, did all of the work, you know, to get all the copies of music to everyone and set up the sound and did everything, you know, your pastor should still give the credit to the worship team for leading the worship and the work that they did. And then if there's a problem, take the blame for it. Don't let that fall on your volunteer leaders. You know, you ultimately, because the truth is, you are responsible. It's your job to step in there and resolve those problems. So it's, and being the shield that takes the flaming arrows, right?
Yeah.
And worship leaders, if you follow your leadership, you put them in a better position to be your shield.
Yeah.
If you go off on your own and do your own thing, you make it much more difficult for your pastor to stand there as a shield for you.
Well, and pastors, you know, to jump right on that, I can't tell you how many times, you know, over the years as a paid worship leader, the pastor was never in the service until the sermon. Yeah. I mean, probably right. hundreds of services over the years, and the pastor would come out, you know, right when it's time for the sermon. Man, that communicated a huge message to the worship team. I'm sure it communicates a message to the congregation, but to the worship yeah. team, it communicated a constant message that this guy doesn't really support what we do, doesn't care about what we do, doesn't value what we do. It's just his thing is the only important thing to him in the service. And I can't tell you how many comments I would hear about that from the worship team. So I know pastors are probably thinking, oh, it's not that big of a deal, but it's a huge deal for your team to see you. To see you worshiping as they lead worship, and I think it's just as big of a deal for your congregation to see you worshiping to the team's role in leading worship and just being up there by example. So it's such a big contrast. You know, I remember one of the pastors at the church that I started off at. Every week, he was right down in front, right front and center, and he'd be the first one with his hands up, you know, and singing out the loudest. And that just communicated a lot to me, and it communicated a lot to the congregation. And I think that's a great example to follow.
Yeah, if a pastor is not a worshiper, then they'll check out.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
All right, I'm going to do a, speaking of checking out, we've been on for quite a while, and I hope people have been listening. I hope you've enjoyed the conversation today. Dan, you certainly add a lot of energy to the discourse that I really appreciate. No offense, David, but you and I together, you know, it's always just, nice to...
That's normal, average, usual.
Well, I mean, at least we have, you know, are you in your 40s yet, David?
Yep, I turn 42 next month.
Right. So, I mean, we have, you know, almost a, you know, we're in two different decades. It's pretty exciting and diverse, despite the fact that we're all white men. So, it's international, at least when Dan joins. And, in terms of facial hair, we have some facial diversity there. But we'll work on that. But anyway, fantastic conversation. I hope people get stuff out of it. Anything else you guys want to throw in there? And you'll forgive me for being abrupt.
I'm good.
Okay. Spoken like a true leader. I've said enough. Yeah. No? Well, mostly just thanks
the way.
For, yeah. Thanks for, you know, letting me be part of the conversation. And again, we can come back and talk more because I think I have a lot to process. It's almost been a year since I've transitioned from being a full-time pastor leader to not being that. And there's still weird ramifications of that. Am I Pastor Dan? Am I not Pastor Dan? I'm in the same town. I'm doing the same things, same people. There's a lot of weird dynamics. Church people do not know how to respond well to change. And that's a topic for another day, but something for people to consider is how do I respond when things don't go my way in the church? And I'm the recipient of the reality of that because people are very weird and awkward when all of a sudden you're not who you were, but you are. So what does a paid role do to you that a volunteer role doesn't? I'm still the same person with the same giftings and the same reality, but if I don't work in a building and call myself this at this place, what's so different about that? And I think, and again, topic for another day, but there's a cultural reality that comes with vocational ministry, at least historically. I think there's a lot changing, but again, I digress, but those are things that I'm still working through as somebody who's transitioning almost at 180.
Yeah. Well, I guess we'll have to have you back so we can talk some more and really give you space to process.
Yeah. process all the stuff you're struggling about.
I'm struggling, guys. I really am.
So sorry.
This is a lot of fun. I appreciate you guys very much. It's always fun talking to you.
Yeah, we appreciate you.
All right, so we're back in 2 weeks with episode 231.
You got it right.
You got it right.
Thanks. And hopefully Dan will be available, and we'll try to make sure that the work schedule allows it.
Have to talk to the boss.
Oh, gosh. Anyway, okay, folks. Dave, hit that closing thing before we get out of hand.
I'm trying. Yeah. It's not going up.
Take care, guys.
I can play the music, there. But my graphic won't.
Thanks for joining us once again on the Worship Ministry Catalyst Podcast.
And make sure to add your voice to the conversation. You can find us at twitter.com/WMCatalyst.
On Facebook at facebook.com/worshipministrycatalyst.
Or head over to worshipministrycatalyst.com and drop us a note.